Well, hello and welcome to the Smells Like Money podcast. Join me, Suzanne Chin Taylor, the doo-doo diva, as I interview guests who are making an impact on how we manage and operate systems for conveying and treating wastewater. As a veteran of the wastewater, trenchless, and civil infrastructure industry, each week I'll be bringing you industry know-how from industry pros who know how. Join me each week as I speak with representatives of organizations that are utilizing disruptive or new technologies and methods, and executives who are excited to share how to be successful and sustainable in our vital industry. So whether you want to learn about the latest trends in technology, in treatment or trenchless, gain tips on training and retaining great talent, or simply how to be more efficient, productive, or profitable, this podcast is for you. Ready? Let's dive right in. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Doo-Doo Divas Smells Like Money podcast. Today, we are visiting overseas, a jump over the pond for us, with Gary Grant, who is the chief, what did you say, technology?
Technical director.
Of Green Infrastructure Consultancy, and they are based out of the UK, and they do some very interesting things. Now, for those of you who have been regular listeners, you know we usually focus on wastewater things here, but Gary's firm kind of works more in the stormwater and what we would consider the green ecoscape side of the business. And I wanted to bring him on the show because I think we really need to start looking at it's all one water. It's not a them and us kind of situation where there's the storm water, there's the drinking water, there's the wastewater. It's all one water and how they're all interconnected and affect each other. And I'll let him share the story of what his company does. But we were talking about interesting things that are being done in the UK and in other places where they've consulted, where it actually, you know, yes, it's dealing with storm water, but how that's having a very positive impact on stormwater, and not just, stormwater, but sewer water, because let's face it, there are still some older combined sewer systems out there around the world that are having to take in stormwater. We're still dealing with a lot of, even when it's closed systems and it's sewer and storm is separated, we still have INI issues. And so stormwater impacts that. And so with that, thank you for coming on the show, Gary. And I'm really interested in having you share your unique perspective and the history of your company.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation. I should say that we are mainly working in urban areas. So green infrastructure, nature-based solutions, as the Europeans call them. So we're looking at things like green roofs or living roofs, as they call them in Portland, Oregon, green walls, rain gardens, what we call sustainable drainage in the UK. I think you call it low impact development. So right. This is looking at the city as a place where we could do more with the rain, if you like. So instead of the rain being considered a problem, well, it can be a problem, but just something that you need to get into the drains as soon as you can. The idea is to create the sponge city so that you're holding the rain in the green roofs, in the rain gardens. Maybe you're harvesting it for later use. And so you're creating that sponge city to keep alive the vegetation, to reduce flood risk, to take some of that storm water out of the drains and leading to problems, and to cool the city in summer and so on. So there are all these multiple benefits as well. So it's about working, lots of different people working together. And it is a bit of a challenge because, of course, the way we're all set up, we're highly specialized, aren't we? We work right. in our own silos. So we tend to cross over with architects, engineers, and others. And, you know, that's very rewarding, but it can be quite frustrating as well. You know, different departments of the local authorities as well. You know, parks is different to drains, is different to highways, and so on. So So we're there in that space where we're interfacing with urban design and city maintenance and trying to get these new features into the city.
So when we talk about retrofitting an older city, what are some of the ways or things that they could start with that you've seen has been successful that, we are talking about stormwater, but that from after implementation have actually had a benefit on either wastewater collection systems or maybe just the amount of water that is flowing down to the treatment plant that really doesn't need to be treated, but it's putting an impact during a storm event?
The first place to look is the street, isn't it? So there are quite a lot of projects where people are looking again at the street, and they're realizing perhaps in the past we tended to just concentrate on providing space for cars, and now people are rethinking that a little bit, aren't they? So cycle lanes, but also more room for vegetation, tree pits, and so on. So if you can make large tree pits which hold more stormwater, or you can put tanks in effect underground, although that's not our favorite approach, but perhaps what we would call stormwater tree pits, if you like. With crates where you're storing water, and then later the trees can drink from that. In Sweden, they have this thing called the Stockholm tree pit, which is where you have structural soil, which is lots of large stones that are put back under the pavement, which are great for the tree, but that holds stormwater. So there's a lot of space potentially underground in streets to start that process. It helps trees. Of course, we have big fights with the utilities and all the other people that need that space. But when everyone comes to the table with the right attitude, you can usually find space to storm water underground. So I think that's the starting point in the streets, greening the streets, if you like.
Well, what's your feeling about, because I see a lot of it, and living in Arizona, desert area, there is this one large, it's not a super high rise like when you think of high rises in New York, but it's fairly high rise for on Phoenix standards. And they've actually created this green building. It's apartments, but plants are growing off the sides of this, almost like the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, if nobody knows what that really ever looked like, but just imagining trying to recreate. And I'm seeing this a lot on the internet of cities that are being planned for the future, and they have those, wonderful 3D renderings of what this building is going to look like. And they all seem to be incorporating this. How much does that really add to a building's cost for development? And what are some of the benefits for that when we're thinking about, a developer's doing this, but how's that going to actually impact a municipality so that maybe municipalities can start working with these developers, giving them maybe credits or something to encourage them to incorporate these kind of designs into the overall plan? How do you see that impacting infrastructure?
That's a really good question. So I understand in the United States that you can get a rebate on the cost of discharging water from buildings if you have a roof garden or a green roof. So there is some potential financial mechanism there, so that you're reducing the running cost of the building long term. And of course, the way you hinted at that, the way you do that is you might store the water in the soil. You can have voids under the soil, what we call blue roofs. You might harvest rainwater, which you then store to irrigate later on. I think that's something that works in many climates. And then, of course, you've got this technique called downpipe disconnection, where instead of the do you call them drain pipes or downpipes? Anyway, you know what I
That's
mean.
about
So
right.
downspouts, yes. Yeah. So your downspout, instead of going straight to the drain, it might go to a tank, or there might be some takeoff there. Or it might even go into a planter. So you can imagine a cascade of water that comes from the roof into a planter. And then when that overflows, perhaps to a lower level planter and so on. So by the time that rain has gone through all these features on a building, relatively little of it will necessarily leave and then go into the sewer. So this is, the Sponge City concept, which we mentioned. And of course, it's much better to do that in that smart way than to just say, okay, we'll buy water from the municipality to irrigate, because as we know, that's very wasteful. Of course, somewhere like the desert, you don't get the rain so often, so you have to think perhaps about storage tanks and so on. But it's still potentially, a very good way of dealing with flood as well, isn't it? Because you imagine the whole city is doing this, you're reducing that surface water flood risk, but then you're holding that water for your cooling, your evaporative cooling. And of course, we know that people love these buildings. So then you've got higher rents, higher value of buildings, and so on. So I think there's a virtuous circle here. If you get it right, it's cost effective because you get the payback from that investment later on.
Oh, you made a good point. Yes, because people do love these. They're pretty.
Yeah.
Don't feel like you're living in that, what I would call the urban concrete jungle. It's bringing that green from the countryside back in. And it gives it some soft, to me, when you see it, it's just a softness.
Yeah.
It makes you feel good. Plants, being around plants makes you feel good.
Yeah, lowers your blood pressure, and there's a lot of evidence now for the psychological benefits and so on. So there's lots and lots of evidence of the benefits there. But I always think it's a shame when people say, well, we're in a desert, we can't afford to waste water on plants. So I get that in the sense that you can't afford to waste water, but I wouldn't see this as a waste of water, especially if you're intercepting rainwater when it falls. Because let's face it, in the desert, most of it goes in the creek and away, doesn't it? So that you're not wasting it if you're storing it. And of course, you're not going to ruin the environment. You're not going to harvest all the water. You're only talking about a small percentage of the rain that, in a storm that flows away.
I just think about, those areas that do get hit hard with rain, that having these kind of measures in place, it will just reduce such a burden during a heavy rain event. And let's face it, we are not seeing these 50-year events. These things that we used to call 50-year events have now become yearly events almost, because of just all of the crazy weather. And that we have to be thinking, if this is now going to be our new normal or our new pattern, we need to start putting I guess these procedures or these methods in place now, so ahead of the curve. Otherwise, it's going to be constantly fighting that battle with the overflow of the water, using it to our advantage instead of fighting against it like it's an enemy.
And I also think we need to remember that there are different types of event, aren't there? So, what you might call a biblical flood, you're not going to fix with a roof garden. But that's about keeping out of the creek, keeping away from the rivers, catchment management,
Right.
resilience, stilt housing, whatever the technical, floodable basements that you can recover quickly from, all this stuff. But I think for the annual events, you still want to capture as much of that water as you can to get all those benefits we talked about. So it's not one size fits all. It's not one thing to fix everything, but it's part of a whole water-wise approach, which is joined up thinking, that kind of thing.
I love that the joined up thinking is that they, have to get all the entities talking to one another about, okay, so what are we going to do about this? So, I guess, from what you were saying earlier, you can start small and build on it, because I know a lot of cities and a lot of entities are concerned with, okay, we want green, we need to start implementing green initiatives, or
Yes.
We want to have a sustainability plan. And so I just saw this when we began talking. Wow, this could be something to think about. Some of the things that, you know, your firm recommends be implemented as, wow, this could really help you meet some of your sustainability goals very effectively and very rapidly. And so, you know, not to put you on the spot here, but wanted you to maybe share maybe highlights of one project where you did something like that, where you saw, you know, or the entity that brought you in actually saw an ROI or an impact by choosing to go in this direction.
There's quite a large hotel in London called the Rubens at the Palace Hotel, which we worked on more than 10 years ago now. And it came out of a piece of work which was called a green infrastructure audit of a city precinct. So the idea is that you map all the trees and all the existing green space in that precinct, and then you come up with a list of ideas. You know, what could you do? Where could you do it? And one of the options was to have a green wall on this hotel. There was a very large blank brick facade, and the hotel were interested because they thought it would look good.
Okay.
That was all. They weren't interested in biodiversity. They weren't interested in carbon. They weren't interested in water conservation. They had no interest in any of that. They just thought, yeah, this could look good, and this will smarten up the hotel. It's quite a high-end hotel, but it was very old. So okay, fine. They put the money up. They did it. It was a bit of a shock, actually, because usually when you make these pitches, you know, you say, would you like to have this? And 9 times out of 10 people say no, don't they? So you're
Right.
waiting for the no. And then when the owner, it was privately owned, when the owner said, and it was owned by one person, when she said, yes, I'd like that, let's make this happen, you know, that's quite a shock, actually. You're dry in the throat. What are we going to do now? But anyhow, we went ahead and greened that. There's it's quite large. People can find it on the internet. There's a lot of articles about it now because it's been around for more than 10 years, Reuben at the Palace Hotel. And so that went ahead. It looked great. Now, what was so there were a couple of things. So there'd been a lot of criticism at the time that these walls were not helping nature, they weren't biodiverse. So we, you know, just ornamental plants. So we made sure there were a lot of flowers in there to attract pollinating insects. So,
Okay.
and there's some native planting in there. So that was something we did. The hotel weren't really interested at the time in that, you know, so what? Who cares about pollinating insects? There'd been criticism that the irrigation on some of these projects used a municipal drinking water. And people would say, well, that's a waste of clean water. So we harvested rain from the roof and downpipe, downspout interception into a tank. So that's irrigated by rainwater. So, you know, that's pretty good as well. But what was really interesting about that project is that because of the cooling from that wall, the air conditioners were not being used as much in the summer. Now we don't, so that's the evaporative cooling from the green wall means that you don't need to switch on the air conditioners in those rooms behind that wall. There's a delay. Now, you know, it doesn't get that hot in London, but in the summer it can do. Occasionally it gets up into the 30s. So, you know, that's a big surprise for Londoners because they don't think of it as a hot city. But we worked with some university students and some projects, research projects, took some infrared photographs, and we had the evidence from the hotel as well. They were saving money on their air conditioning and their energy bill. They're reducing their carbon footprint. So that was unexpected for them. And, you know, subsequently we found that, you know, there are a lot of benefits on the, you know, you mentioned sustainability journey that people have, you know, carbon, energy, greening vegetation and soil and water together reduce demand for air conditioning and electricity use. In a very hot place, they probably can't do the whole thing on their own, but they if they can reduce that demand, if it means the air conditioner isn't switched on until late in the afternoon, maybe if it's an office, you don't need it because you just go home an hour earlier, and it maybe there's a you could do even more. So that was the surprise with that. It's not a surprise now because 10 years on, there's a lot of published papers on this. And so it means now, instead of people in arid areas saying we're not interested in greening because of the water demand, they're now aware that there are all these benefits from working with water to get cooling and other benefits. So I, that's a fascinating and unexpected story, I think, for some people.
Because that's even something to think about, if there's wastewater treatment plant or water treatment plant operators, listening or superintendents, wow, imagine just, you do have a lot of power consumption that offices, if it's one way to, save the ratepayers some money by just reducing your own energy bill, just by doing something that is good for the planet and beautifies the grounds. Wow, why not?
And of course, we have to be smart. So I know
Yes.
treated sewage effluent is used a lot, I think probably in the States as well. And of course, we don't want to waste that irrigating ornamental, lawns where we don't need lawns and so on. But if we're using that to cool the streets, to irrigate trees, to cool buildings down, then I think that is a reasonable use of treated sewage effluent as well. So, yeah, I think there's more that we can do with that, definitely.
Wow. A lot of food for thought here, Gary. I mean, just I wish, I don't have the ability to do a roof garden, but boy, I'd love to do one. I love my garden. And it does, it makes a big difference when you have trees around you in the summertime, especially living in Arizona. Just difference in the afternoon when the sun comes over and the tree is providing shade, to just not have that air conditioner, chugging away, pour. A little harder, really working hard to keep that house cool. So yeah, lots of things to consider. I think there's many applications that, like I said, we've just begun to touch the surface of with some of these, as you term it, with your email, and that's what caught me, is ecoscapes, by adopting that kind of approach to how we want to do development and even how we want to do improvement on existing old buildings. Like for instance, that hotel here, they were just going for something aesthetic and got a nice little added benefit from it too. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And the other benefit, which we didn't really think about so much at the time, but that's now coming into people's minds, is the ability of vegetation to intercept air pollution. So, as you know, in some cities, there's a lot of dust, there's a lot of particulates from vehicles, there's nitrogen oxides and so on. And, most plants can intercept soot or particulates quite well. Some plants are particularly good at absorbing some of the gases as gaseous pollutants. So there's a whole piece of work that's been done where people have been testing the ability of plants to absorb pollutants. And I know NASA did a lot of work on this years ago because they were looking at living on Mars and how you improve air quality, and a lot of house plants were found to work. But now people are looking at outdoor plants, some sticky plants that absorb pollutants, others just slow down the flow of the air so the pollutants drop out of the air, others, as I say, absorb the gas through the stomata of the leaves. So there's a lot there. And of course, the other thing is where you strategically place that vegetation. So, with climbers, with screens, you can actually protect, for instance, in London, a lot of the schools now put climbing plants around the fence, the boundary fence, so that the pollution from the street doesn't get into the yard, the schoolyard. So All right, we would rather that we didn't have so many dirty vehicles there, and in the future we'll have more zero emissions vehicles. But of course, in the meantime, reducing that air pollution in this way is definitely another benefit that people should be aware of. So again, if you're irrigating those plants in a relatively dry place, that's another good way of using a wise way of using water. So, when you stack all these benefits up, then it makes sense. It's almost impossible to argue. Well, people do argue against it, of course they do, but in my mind, it's almost impossible. What's not to like, as they say? It's impossible to argue against that. There's so many benefits.
Right. Well, Gary, thank you for sharing your expertise and your thoughts on this subject. I find it fascinating. And for those who are tuning in, how can they learn more about what your company does and its consultancy if they're thinking about embracing, adopting some of these solutions?
Well, of course, they can start at our website, thegic.com, and there's a few projects on there and some links. We have in the UK, we have we call low impact development sustainable drainage, and there's a whole community that SusDrain, we call it. It's run by an institute called the CIRIA Construction Industry Research and Information Association, and they have a hundreds of case studies of rain gardens and projects. So there's lots of information there which people can have a look at. Also, of course, our friends and neighbors on the continent, in Germany and Switzerland, Austria, some terrific projects there as well. There's an organization called the European Federation of Green Roof Associations, and they're EFB. They're worth having a look at. And of course, the European Union, which is the umbrella for all the nations in Europe, they've got their own advice on nature-based solutions, NBS, we call that. So there are literally thousands of projects which people can have a look at. If you look up nature-based solutions in particular. And of course, in the States as well, Portland, Oregon pioneers, Philadelphia, terrific work on the rain gardens. Some cities in the US are probably world leading, I would say. So yeah, there's plenty of examples out there, but of course, we've all got our own peculiar way of working. Each city seems to be slightly different. Different complexion of politics and regulation. But in the end, what I've found traveling around the world is that everywhere you go, it's the same stuff: flooding, drought, overheating in summer. Even in the Arctic, in Finland, Sweden, they're overheating in summer. They have flash floodings, and the deserts, the Middle East, they're really getting excited about using water and vegetation to help cool their cities. So, okay, the climates are different wherever you go, but I think you just need to put a local twist on it, don't you? So it's the same approach, but locally appropriate vegetation, work with the local regulations, the local culture, but we can all learn from each other. That's the point.
Great. All right. Well, thank you again for being a guest on the show and sharing your knowledge. This was, I hope the audience listening out there, start taking a look at this, explore it. I think this is something that we really need to give serious consideration to as we move forward. And again, thank you. And until next time, keep it flowing.
Great to see you.
Thanks so much for joining me, the Doo-Doo Diva, on this week's episode of Smells Like Money. What stood out to you this week? Share your takeaways by leaving me a review. You can find out more about the new technologies, creating sustainable solutions and insights on how to succeed in our vital industry by subscribing to the show. Whether you want to learn about the latest trends in wastewater infrastructure, treatment, or trenchless, you've got it all right here at Smells Like Money. If you're an industry expert and would like to be considered as a guest for the show, book a quick chat with me by visiting calendly.com/thetuitgroup/B-A-podcast-guest. or simply click the link in the show notes below. Until next week, a big shout out to all my industry friends and those who will be. You are my superheroes. Thanks for tuning in, keeping it flowing, and we'll see you all next week.